Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Hello and welcome to Outward, Slate's podcast about LGBTQ pluses, where the plus stands for superior, because that's what we are. I'm Brian Lauder. I'm an editor at Slate.
And I'm Daisy Rosario. I'm a senior supervising producer of audio here at Slate.
I'm so happy you're here, Daisy. This is so exciting.
Thank you.
Today we have an episode about two very gay movies, two very lesbian movies, in fact.
Oh, yes.
That are out right now. Of course, I'm talking about Love Lies Bleeding, which I suspect you've heard about, and another movie called Drive Away Dolls.
Yes, that's right. And I know that Love Lies Bleeding has been getting all the attention.
Yeah.
But there's also this movie, Drive Away Dolls, and I just feel like we're in one of those situations, like when Armageddon and Deep Impact were out at the same time. Or The Prestige and The Illusionist. Like, there's always one that is largely forgotten or ignored compared to the other. And even though it's not exactly the same, like, the pop culture lover in me just immediately was like, wait a minute. Two lesbian, crime-ish, caper-ish movies at the same time? Like, what is happening?
Totally, totally. I love the Deep Impact callback. That's so funny. Yeah, I'm excited to listen to this conversation because I have not actually seen Love Lies Bleeding yet. And I understand that I, like, absolutely have to. I think I'm going to go do it this weekend. I did read in Slate, we had a great edition of our sex reviews column.
Oh, yeah.
That Madeline and Christina Carterucci, who we miss on the show.
We miss her so much,
did about that one. And I understand that it represents, according to Madeline, I think, a new, exciting, like, butch journey for Kristen Stewart. So I'm pumped to see that.
Oh, it does. Yeah. So today, Madeline and I are going to talk about both of these movies because, in part, Madeline did talk about Love Lies Bleeding on Culture Gab Fest. But also, yeah, she co-wrote that article with Christina. Side note, I, of course, love that Christina took a little bit of time away from her very busy schedule working on Slow Burn and was like, I'm sorry, guys, I'm not going to miss the opportunity to talk about this lesbian sex movie. And I respect her so immensely for that. Like, that's
I think it's the one byline she's had in the magazine, like, since she started Slow Burn. It's like,
genuinely,
nothing else but this was important enough to
she wasn't going to miss it. You know, she's still on her kind of hiatus. But yeah, Madeline and I got together to talk about it in the meantime. Honestly, if there weren't, you know, so many time zones and moving parts involved, I'm sure we would have also liked to have, like, looped in June Thomas, would have wanted to know what Jules thought of everything. But, you know, these movies are, they're both still out right now. So we wanted to make sure that we got a chance to talk about them. And after I read Madeline's article that she wrote with Christina, I just knew I had to talk to Madeline. So Madeline and I are going to break down both movies for everybody today.
So excited for that. We will be back with that conversation right after a break. The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. You've never seen a mother-son duo like this before. The show is full of wit, scandal, action, and did I mention Julianne Moore? Something this audacious and sexy is as genre-bending as it gets. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Welcome back to Outward. Daisy Rosario here, and I'm with Madeline Ducharme, and now we are going to talk to you a bit more about these two movies that I'm kind of just surprised that they are out at the same time. It's not quite like an Independence Day deep impact situation, but
or
it
like
does.
Bugs Life and Ants or
right.
something.
Yeah, but like it feels somewhat similar, right?
Totally.
So we've got Love Lies Bleeding, which is maybe of the two, maybe the one that you might have heard of if you haven't
sure.
heard of Drive Away Dolls, but they're both like lesbian, crimey, capery. They both have like surreal elements.
Violent. Silly, unexpected settings, too.
Unexpected settings. And, you know, Love Lies Bleeding is set in 1989. So like right as we're about to start the 90s, Drive Away Dolls is set 10 years later in 1999. So they're
yeah.
neither is set right now. They're
True.
Both on the either end of the 90s decade. So there's just a lot of stuff about kind of both of them that made me interested, especially as queer people ourselves. So
yeah.
So Madeline, you did get to write a bit about Love Lies Bleeding for the site. You also talked about the movie on Culture Gabfest, which
yes.
people should absolutely listen to. It's you, Nadira Goff, Dan Coyce, and Dana Stevens. And
yeah.
it's a great conversation. So let's talk about these two movies. So I was immediately interested in like seeing both. I heard about
yeah,
both at
me
various
too.
Points in the last, you know, many months.
Absolutely.
And but they're also like very different movies in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
So, Madeline, like first impressions, you saw both. I know that you loved Love Lies Bleeding.
I loved Love Lies
like,
Bleeding.
Spoiler and alert, Madeline loved it.
And I also loved Drive Away Dolls for very different reasons.
For very different reasons. I liked both a lot as
yeah.
well. They're very different. But like, yeah, tell me a little bit about what you loved about these movies.
Well, I think we can start with the two auteurs, the three, I guess, auteurs behind both of these films. We have Rose Glass, who
yeah.
clearly loves body horror. She's very young. She
mm-hmm.
Is coming to this film having not made a film in America, having not even really been to the places that
yeah.
this movie takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Trisha Cook and Ethan Coen, who made Drive Away Dolls, you know, it's credited as directed by Ethan Coen, but he has been very intentional in saying that they co-directed this film.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And they co-wrote it.
Yeah. And some of that stuff, just when that gets quirky, some of that is just like union guild
yeah,
stuff
totally.
About like when you're allowed to put somebody's name. So,
right.
yeah, just to kind of acknowledge, like it's not like he's trying to keep her out of it and then
exactly.
also keep her in it in
exactly.
conversation. There's just like rules around the way credits work. But he's been very, very outspoken about like that's his wife, his
mm-hmm.
like long-term partner. They've written together for years.
Yeah.
She edited the film. They co-wrote the script together.
Right. And yeah. they're really comfortable in that Americana kind of
yeah.
weird, silly caper film. And I think that Rose Glass is coming at it almost from like an outsider's perspective
yeah.
because of her background not being from the United States. And I think that they can fill whatever desire you have
yeah.
if you want something silly and madcap and ridiculous. That's very much Drive Away Dolls. But if you want something dangerous and
yes.
sexy,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's interesting is that both of these things could be kind of applied to each other too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both of the films can be described as both of those things. But it's kind of what tasting note you want at the front of your film experience.
Yeah.
And I think that so much of these movies are about how terrific these characters are. They're
mm-hmm.
so specific in both films.
Yeah.
And the casting that I think was fantastic. So I want to hear for you, you know, we know Kristen Stewart. This is
yeah.
a big film for her, a big like kind of almost like a Dyke soft butch coming out for
yeah,
her, which
yeah.
I'm thrilled about.
Yeah.
But I also want to hear about the casting and characters from your perspective.
Yeah. So Love Lies Bleeding, I love the casting just top to bottom, right? So there's the Kristen Stewart of it all. There's the Katie O'Brien of it all, which
right.
we will get more into. Katie O'Brien.
Oh my
like,
God.
In general. But then the surrounding cast is fantastic as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you got Jenna Malone as the sister Beth. She's the sister of Lou, who is Kristen Stewart's character.
Right.
You got Ed Harris,
Fantastic. Who,
Ed Harris is like one of those people that like I don't personally think of a lot.
No.
But whenever he shows up, I'm like, that man's going to do a good job.
Thank goodness casting directors think of him.
Right? Like, yeah. And he has a terrible wig that is also wonderful in how bad it is.
Yeah. And he's eaten bugs. He's loathsome.
Yeah. He's just gross. And you've got Dave Franco.
Mm-hmm. Also loathsome.
Also loathsome. Then you've got this character named Daisy, which, you know, I'm distracted the minute a Daisy comes up since that is my
naturally.
Name. Played by Anna Baryshnikov. And also a really interesting, compelling character. And so, like, the casting is just fantastic in Love Lies Bleeding. My honest, like, first reaction to the movie overall was my brain kept going, so the movie is called Love Lies Bleeding, but the movie itself is love, comma, lies, comma, bleeding. It's like, that's really what kind of happened. It's like, it's more like it's these big three things that happen in the movie.
Yeah.
And so I just kept thinking about that after. But the chemistry between the characters, the actors playing them as well, all of that just feels so real and lived in and complex. And they're making choices that you wouldn't make yourself, but that you can kind of see why they're making those choices, at least in the moment.
And they're fearless.
And they're fearless about them. It's
almost shocking how fearless Kristen Stewart is in this part. I've never seen her do something like this.
Yeah.
And I am kind of a Kristen Stewart completist, you know.
Yeah.
Throwback to Personal Shopper. That is actually.
Oh, my God.
If you liked a Kristen Stewart self-pleasure scene that happens in Love Lies Bleeding, then boy, will you love Personal Shopper.
A better one in Personal Shopper.
But also, I want to talk about their sort of foils in Driveway Dolls, because we have two main characters, two lesbian queer main characters in Love Lies Bleeding. And we also have two queer main characters who are best friends in Driveway Dolls. And they're played by Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan, who I didn't realize it until after I saw the film. But after seeing Margaret Qualley in her sort of soft butch, kind of utterly ridiculous country accent, I subconsciously went to Target and I bought a couple of tank tops. Actually, not a couple. I bought four tank tops that clearly look exactly like the kind of outfits that she was wearing in this film. So you can tell that I got a little mesmerized even by Margaret Qualley. I think she's so charismatic, even when she's being utterly ridiculous. And Geraldine Viswanathan, what a star. A star-making role.
I just enjoy her in everything I see her in.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely.
And it's hard to make the sort of stuffy, you know, stick-up-their-ass character so funny and so lovable.
Yeah.
And I think that she can really walk the line there. You know, when there's a hard cut from a moment where it might be these two best friends having a threesome with some girl they picked up at a random lesbian bar down the coast. When that moment happens, there's a hard cut. And this is also, you know, Trisha Cook's brilliant editing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a hard cut to the Geraldine character sitting in the like motel's disgusting lobby reading Henry James, the Europeans. Yeah. And it's like laugh out loud funny. She's so, so good.
I mean, part of what really struck me about both movies, and it's not just that they're kind of set on either end of the 90s, but they just feel very 90s in that kind of like indie film had such a major, major moment and like evolved so much within the 90s.
Yeah.
And as somebody who is in my 40s and was like seeing those movies in theaters at the time and was like really, really big into independent film overall.
Yeah.
It was like such a lovely feeling just to be watching things that felt so like independent. I love it when there's a range of art available. And so it feels like you could see a bubbling up of some of this kind of independent spirit that is great when it's there, but has been in short supply.
Totally.
There's a bunch of different like surreal moments, which if you are aware of Ethan Coen's work with his brother Joel, right? Like if you're a Coen Brothers fan, it's not out of place at all, or it doesn't seem completely out of the realm of possibility of something that would happen, but it's got a very different vibe in this.
Sure. And it's psychedelic.
It's more psychedelic.
It's like a surprise appearance from Miley Cyrus, who was not in the marketing materials and who has a kind of bravado whenever she's on screen. I think that that gets a little bit dismissed because of her Disney background. And I think that that is something that, you know, Disney actors sort of have to shake off for the entirety of their adult careers. But she is such a these moments that are like completely not of the time that our two main characters are in. They're completely drug trippy. They're colorful. They're bizarre. They don't explain themselves until much, much later.
Yeah. Well, and in the 90s, you had a, especially in the early 90s, I mean, granted, the movie is set in the late 90s, but sure. in the early 90s, you had a huge, like, obsession with the 70s, right? Mm. As we always do on these, like, 20-year cycles.
Right.
It feels kind of related to both, like, the trend that was there at the time and tonally kind of a willingness to just be a little bit more challenging, be a little bit more playful, be a little bit more daring, be a little less obvious, and, like, just see if you can... You know, for lack of a better way to put it, like, tell some of it in a vibe. The vibe is worked on. The vibe is developed. Like, they're not assuming that you just get the vibe, but they're not, like, verbally explaining the vibe.
Yes. And you can feel the sinister vibe in Love Lies Bleeding in some of these early moments in the film that soak the screen in red. Mm-hmm. It's like, all of a sudden, Kristen Stewart's character, Lou, is... covered in red, like her whole face, her body, the screen has gone completely separate of the real world, and we're in a sort of hazy nightmare.
Yeah.
And those moments are really scary. They're satisfying.
Yeah.
And I do think, back to what you said about being daring, that means we have to talk about the sex.
We do absolutely have to talk about the sex. So before we do that, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to get into the very, very hot sex scenes in Love Lies Bleeding. And also some of the sex that we see in Drive Away Dolls and the Katie O'Brien-ness of it all.
Absolutely.
All right, we are back. I'm Daisy Rosario. I'm here with Madeline Ducharme. We are talking about two lesbian, crime-ish, capery movies that are out right now, Love Lies Bleeding and Drive Away Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to talk now about the sex, which you helped co-write an article for Slate with our own Christina Cotarucci, who is one of the usual hosts of this show, who we miss right now as she works on Slow Burn.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sex.
Oh my God. I think that there are some images in here of their two bodies, of the two of them wanting each other so much that I cannot, you know, get out of my mind. I think, like, even as I'm drifting to sleep a week or two later, I'm still like, oh my God, Katie O'Brien had her foot in Kristen Stewart's mouth and it was hot and cool and dangerous.
Yes.
Because right before that, she almost lit her on fire.
Yeah.
it's exciting.
And it really is a good example of sex scenes that aren't also like just gratuitous in the sense of like the chemistry between the actors is part of what's helping you understand the way that they are drawn to each other.
Yeah.
Like they're not... There's not a bunch of dialogue or exposition being like, for these reasons, or like, because of this thing in my life, like, this person, like, it's about the way that they look at each other. It's about the way that they physically interact with each other.
Right.
And what we are shown, like, just helps paint that picture of, like, the desire and the passion between them.
Yeah. And don't you think the magnetic forces between both the Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien character, and then also the two characters in Drive Away Dolls, those are the forces that are sort of... They're so powerful that all of four of these characters have to get dragged into hijinks, some dangerous, some hilarious, with each other because of how intensely they are drawn to each other. You know, it starts as friends in Drive Away Dolls, but there's something that the two of them can't deny about each other, and they can't deny each other of pursuing because I think especially the character Marianne, because she wants to spend time with her ridiculous friend in spite of every single start and stop that makes their journey so unpleasant and ridiculous and veers them off course. And I do think that there's sex scenes in Drive Away Dolls that are funny, they're goofy, and they frankly feel like the kind of sex that my friends and I have had in the past. You know, not all sex is so hungry and ravenous and sexy, for lack of a better word.
They some both of feel it, authentic, but in very different ways.
Totally, totally. And some of the sex scenes in Drive Away Dolls are silly. I think, like, particularly of that scene where it's not really sex, it's more like just a makeout party, but the two main characters get drawn into a Georgia college girls soccer team, and I couldn't help but think of Yellow Jackets, of course, who are all hanging out in a basement together. Mm-hmm. They find two beautiful, silly gals at a diner and say, you know, let's come make out. And there's even a coach, so to speak, of in the middle of this event who is blowing a whistle and allowing them to then switch spots. So, like, everybody gets a little taste of everybody. And I thought that whole little sequence was so... smart, so funny, and also let us get that first little spark of romance between our two main characters who at that point have really only been best friends, who one of them gets dragged along into doing everything because of this undeniable magnetism between them.
Yeah. I mean, those parts felt so, again, like authentic and real to me. And I was wondering, in part, like, just since we are of different generations, like how they read to you, because, like, to me, you know, I looked up a bit about the movie. And so Trisha Cook, who, again, is married to Ethan Coen, they co-wrote the movie together. This is a script that they originally wrote, like, way back. You know, like
when
not,
it was contemporaneous.
When it was, exactly. So it is, in a lot of ways, inspired by some of Trisha's own experiences going to different lesbian bars, like in different areas. And as someone who got to really, like, watch the changeover to a more digital life, it still felt, it felt really authentic to me in terms of, they, like, get invited to this basement party and things like that. And that, like, those different outlets existed. You just had to know where to look for them. Mm-hmm. But I was curious, like, how those scenes read, or if it felt almost like manufactured, just because, I mean, I think you are somebody who's, like, a very informed person and, like, reads and knows a lot about different time periods. But I think if you don't have to focus on that, sometimes it can be easy to be unaware of how many other things, like, sometimes we're ahead of their time, if you will, or, like, areas where we might have been more open, where there was backsliding socially and things like that.
I know. I think that somebody like me, who's basically my entire adult life has included online dating. Like, I think I got on Tinder maybe like late high school. So
wild to me.
I know. Yeah. So there is something about Driveway Dolls that this entire movie wouldn't really exist if Tinder existed for these characters.
Sure.
Because a big reason why they do the driveway, why they decide to be the hired drivers to drive from Philadelphia to Tallahassee, is that the Margaret Qualley character wants to get her friend laid.
Yeah.
And that is something that they're like, we're just going to stop at all of these dyke spots on the way down. And I think that's something that just isn't something you'd think to do.
It would be very different now. You're right.
You'd post a little ad on, you know, whatever, her or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. I haven't been on a
Your friend would be like,
so
I'm going to make the profile for you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to put it together and write it the way I think it needs to convey what I'm trying to get for you.
None of your photos are sexy enough. What's wrong with you? Take a photo right now.
Yeah.
And that's just not cinematic.
Yeah, no, it's not.
And I did feel kind of a deep nostalgia for an experience I never had, which is to say that, like, you really had to pursue sex. You had to pursue romance, maybe not to the extent that they do, which is driving 1,000 miles, but you had to get out there.
Yeah.
And they're always getting out there. And the Margaret Qualley character, part of why she's so sexy is that she is unafraid to be out there. One of the earliest
completely unafraid
is her flashing an entire dyke bar in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So there's something that I wish that existed still.
Yeah.
We do have a couple of lesbian bars in DC, but nothing like that is happening.
Yeah,
they're not
gritty. Right. The vibe of everything is a lot different in a world where you can be recorded doing anything.
Oh, God,
like, you
know,
so it's like, we don't even have to get into the bigness of all of that to, like, make sense of it. But yeah, like, in both movies, the fact that the characters are, like, aware of kind of only being able to be truly themselves in, like, certain settings. Like, in Driveway Dolls, they're actually more kind of seemingly fearless overall, but they still seem very aware of, like, who they're interacting with at any given moment.
Right.
But part of that is the fact that they're, like, literally physically going to different locations, whereas Love Lies Bleeding is, like, set in this town that Kristen Stewart's character has lived in her entire life and that she's never left and that, you know, her father has a lot of control over, let's say. So the dynamics and, like, that part of it are different. But overall, like, yeah, there was just something about both of them in that way that felt really kind of special and true. But yeah, I had heard so much good stuff about Love Lies Bleeding that I almost also, like, expected to really not like Driveaway Dolls in a way.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
And I think this for me is where it gets back to that kind of, like, Independence Day deep impact thing, is that it's like, even though, again, like, they're not quite the same. They feel accidentally related in some way.
And you just have to pit lesbians against each other, don't you, Daisy?
Always. It's because I'm between seasons in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. When I can just watch them actually compete, it's fine.
We would have manufacture competition between two lesbian movies.
I'm like, I'm waiting, you know, and we didn't have any March Madness games for like the last 2 days. So I'm like distraught. Some of it is also just that, like, when you don't get a lot of stuff, you don't have high expectations.
Mm.
So I actually really did like both. I mean, in very different ways. Like, obviously, like, we're talking about them, and I think we'd both encourage anybody listening to go check them both out.
See, like, both.
They just have very different tones. Like, you know, if you're if you're looking for a lighter evening, it's more Driveway Dolls.
Yes.
If you're looking for a darker evening, a sexier evening,
maybe a propulsive evening,
evening, then, you know, then Love Lies Bleeding is maybe more your speed. But they're both great.
Yeah.
We've talked about how great the cast is in both, but I do want to make sure we spend a little bit of time talking about, I think, the person who's probably most surprising out of all, like, both movies and just fantastic, because they haven't gotten a lot of other recognition previous to this.
Yeah.
And that's Katie O'Brien.
Oh, my God.
Playing Jackie in Love Lies Bleeding. Margot Qualley's so talented, and Kristen Stewart's so talented, but, you know, those are people that
we know.
We know that they're good.
Yeah.
But Katie O'Brien, like, you maybe have never seen her in anything before, or maybe you've only seen her in, like, The Mandalorian.
I know. Or, the thought of her withering away in a TV show like that, that does not clearly understand how to use her presence on screen, right?
Yeah.
I think there's something appealing for a TV show like that to somebody who is so built. I mean, her arms and her body, her abs, her shoulders.
So she's playing a bodybuilder in the movie, and the actress herself is a former bodybuilder.
Right.
And as has been mentioned in a few places, like, people sent her the casting notice.
On Twitter. Yeah.
You know, so it was one of those really lovely fits. But just as an actress, like, it's not just that Katie O'Brien is hot, because Katie O'Brien is very hot. And that plays into the dynamics in the film and things like that. There's just, she's just so, like, glowing in this movie. Like, she brings a lightness to this absurdity and that seems so difficult to manage. Like, it's just, she plays the role so well. And at the same time, like, I just can't take my eyes off of her, not just because she's attractive, but because of the way that she's, like, existing in this role.
Yeah, there's this tenderness to her expression when she's spending time with the Kristen Stewart character early on, you know, as they're barreling towards disaster. You know they will be at some point. But there are these sort of blissful, you know, moments and sequences where they're just enjoying life together. They've U-hauled officially, because Katie O'Brien's character has no place to stay.
Right.
And in doing that, you can see in her face, there's this softness, there's this tenderness that is so, you know, in juxtaposition with her body. It's kind of surprising.
Yes,
it's something that draws you in. It's something that makes you, like, believe that the Lou character would let this beautiful woman just crash land into her life. I feel like, not only, I mean, is her body incredible and fills the screen, and she knows how to just be there and grab your eyes. I think she has this incredible face, too, where even as her character's having a meltdown, you can see absolutely everything in her eyes, everything in her, you know, smile. She has this, like, 1,000-watt smile on top of everything, too. I think that I feel a lot like her wife, who is always posting about her and talking about how hot she is on Instagram.
So Madeline,
exactly the same way.
In the Culture Gab Fest episode, Madeline does mention Katie O'Brien's actual wife and, like, checking out her Instagram. And let me tell you how I immediately looked that up as I was listening to the episode and started looking at Katie O'Brien's wife's posts. And they're fantastic. Yeah, it's
so sweet.
It's such a good vibe. It's just, like, one of those things where you're like, the person just clearly appreciates and is so proud of their significant other. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, really lovely. That's a hot Instagram follow. Like, I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah. And that's all I want social media to be. It's just, like, beautiful women who act in movies that are crazy and stick with me, and then their wives are posting about how incredible they are.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's
pretty much
that is what social media should be.
But I mean, one last thing I want to say about Katie O'Brien is just like, there's almost a naivete at times,
yeah,
in a very sweet way.
Oh,
right?
Totally.
Like there are moments, as you mentioned, like her character doesn't actually have a place to live. And so she ends up U-hauling with Kristen Stewart like pretty quickly. But, you know, before that, we see the way that she is living unhoused.
Yeah.
And like, even in those moments, like there is like a sunniness to it. There's, yeah, like a, you could tell that there's like a positive disposition of like, I'm gonna do what I gotta do and get through this. Like there's just this like lovely lightness to it that I think is just so wonderful. And because her body is so amazing and is such a big part of like the story and the way that the two characters interact, I don't want that kind of lightness and sunniness.
Yeah.
And like, it almost seems like guilelessness,
yeah,
but you know, it's really lovely, and that part really shines in so many just moments where we're seeing the character exist, whether mm-hmm. she's at her job serving drinks to the people at the gun club or whatever, yeah, right? Like she's just comfortable in her own skin in a way that I think is like beautiful to see,
yeah,
and would come across regardless of what her body actually looked like. But because of what her body looks like and the context of it in this movie, it just, I think, makes it sing even more.
That's such a good point. And I think that that sunniness is an amazing quality to have. And it's something that Rose Glass was clearly looking for in this,
yeah,
character, because this character also does have the capacity for such brutal violence,
just absolutely,
in with her own body, right?
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't use a gun. Our colleague Dan Coyce wrote a great article that was about the end of the film, which mm-hmm. is so much about how her body is the like thing that allows her to be a hero, allows her to be a villain, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that O'Brien strikes this balance between, I am so tender, I need somebody to make my omelets in the morning,
right,
and also I could like smash a guy's face in so badly that his jaw is hanging off of the bone.
Yes.
It's an amazing balance in the course of, you know, 100 minutes.
Yeah.
That's just like something I haven't been able to truly wrap my head around. Like, what an incredible balancing act that whole,
yeah,
experience was.
Mm-hmm. And I think that like, it's a beautiful balance too. I think like what Kristen Stewart naturally brings, which is a little bit more of, gosh, I guess I don't know exactly how to explain it. But I mean, like Kristen Stewart in general, I don't go into any movie expecting her to be the sunny one. You know, like I expect her to be the neurotic one.
Aloof,
maybe a little gloomy, not necessarily mm-hmm. a sad sack, but maybe a little gloomy. You know, she's got like the cloud, kind of rain cloud over her head.
Yeah.
So you want to balance that out with somebody where it's like the sun is shining and everything's bright. And that
right.
is what Katie O'Brien feels like she brings to this role. And so they balance each other out in that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I wonder, just to bring the two movies back together too,
yeah,
what is the next journey? What is the next surprising destination? What is the next surprising character dynamic that you would like to see in
a queer
movie in the, you know, coming months? Because I honestly think both of these films could be an amazing triple feature with Bottoms. It was
sure.
You could start with the silliest Bottoms to Driveway Dolls, which gets a little bit more violent, a little darker, a little stay silly, of course.
Yeah.
And then it just transitions perfectly into Love Lies Bleeding, and there's your seven
yeah.
and a half hour evening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny because even as you were asking the question, I found myself kind of pulled to the time period situation
mm-hmm.
of all of it. And I feel like it's harder for me to think of the dynamic I want. But when I think of it, I'm like, well, Love Lies Bleeding is set in like 89, and then Driveaway Dolls is in 1999. And then Bottoms came out last year
yeah.
and is not set in reality, but is ostensibly set in the current day.
Sure.
Right. And so like what it made me really want then is something that is more of those like aughts, something that feels true to that experience, because Bottoms yeah. does feel very 2023.
Sure, totally.
And again, even though these other two movies that we're talking about like both came out in the last many months, they are not only set in more in like the 90s, but they feel spiritually related to that time.
Yeah.
Because the different eras talked about are like all eras I've lived through so far.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I find myself drawn to the idea of like,
totally.
Okay, but there's a huge window there that we haven't actually looked at, and that's what I would be curious for.
Do you think it's because like the 2008 lesbian fashion would be so terrifying and horrendous that we can't even go there yet?
I mean, it's going to be terrifying and horrendous, but we're also going to probably start doing it again in like 3 years.
No!
So,
so
it might be better to brace ourselves now and remind ourselves what we were working on.
Study up.
Yeah, exactly.
But who would it star? Who are the next great lesbian couple dynamics, silliness. I don't know. Who are the next great actors that are going to do that, too?
That's a good question. I mean, because the thing is, I wouldn't have known Katie O'Brien's name necessarily.
Right.
Or even though I did see her on The Mandalorian, I wouldn't necessarily have thought of her. And then on the other end with Drive Away Dolls, not the actresses I would have thought of necessarily.
Same.
And we don't always know how people actually identify. So it's probably safer to say not that it's like that movie stars two straight women and more like it does not star two out.
Right.
Queer actresses.
Like queer icons.
Right.
They're not really that.
And so I thought everybody did like a great job. Like, you know, like I was worried even going into watching Drive Away Dolls of like, is Margaret Qualley's character going to feel like it's mocking or like, you know, because it, but, you know, not at, like,
not at all.
She was in it. She was fully in it. Like physically, like her body language and stuff. Like I believed it all the time. So
me too.
Yeah. I thought those were great.
I know. I would love to see, I don't know, a Sydney Sweeney type in Ugg boots at the club listening to Flo Rida in your 2008 lesbian caper drama.
Oh, my goodness.
Or comedy.
There you go, right? Again, the two movies, and you should absolutely check out both, are Love Lies Bleeding and Drive Away Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And Madeline, thanks so much for chatting with me about these two movies today. I appreciate it.
Oh, my God. Thank you for having me. And I can't wait to come back for our 2008 lesbian
right?
film conversation.
Brian and Jules will be back next week. In the meantime, this has been Outward. Outward is produced by Palace Shaw. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Daisy Rosario, Senior Supervising Producer. Alicia Montgomery is our Head of Audio at Slate. And thanks, Madeline. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Daisy.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. The show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.